Does it get easier?
No. Yes. It gets easier.
Oh, yeah? Look at you.
Thanks. The more you know who you are and what you want, the less you let things upset you.
Yeah. I just don't know what I'm supposed to be. You know? I tried being a writer, but I hate what I write. And I tried taking pictures, but they're so mediocre. You know, when every girl goes through a photography phase. You know, like horses. You know, take dumb pictures of your feet.
You'll figure that out. I'm not worried about you. Keep writing.
But I'm so mean.
Means okay.
What about marriage? Does that get easier?
That's hard. We used to have a lot of fun. You would come with me when I made the movies, and we would laugh about it all. Now she doesn't want to leave the kids, and she doesn't need me to be there. The kids miss me, but they're fine. It gets a whole lot more complicated when you have kids.
Yeah, it's scary.
It's the most terrifying day of your life, the day the first one is born.
Nobody ever tells you that.
Your life, as you know it, is gone. Never to return. But they learn how to walk, and they learn how to talk, and you want to be with them. And they turn out to be the most delightful people you will ever meet in your life.
Greetings.
And salutations.
Welcome
to Fright Geek Brunch.
Welcome to Fright Night.
For real.
With your hosts, Dracula and Frankenstein.
Ho, 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 ho. What number
just
are we
kidding.
On?
This is Geek Brunch Retrocast. We're counting backwards now, right?
I labeled that was funny because I labeled the episode right. I just put the title wrong.
Yeah. This is episode 32 of the Geek Brunch Retrocast.
Are you sure? Because I will go back in time. You know me.
I'm sure it's 32. I'm looking at the website right now. But that would be an interesting thing to do, is to get to a certain number and then start counting backwards. Just to confuse the hell out of people. But we're not here to confuse. We're here to entertain.
Yeah.
And make you fall asleep.
That's right.
By driving.
Daryl might be joining us later today.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
My name is Chris, and I'm here with my silent co-host, Dusty the Cat.
That's me.
Yeah, that's you. No, you're the vocal co-host.
Ah.
Michael.
Michael Myers. It goes in with the Dracula and Frankenstein.
Yeah, you're in the habit of wearing a spray painted William Shatner mask.
Yep. We like Star Trek. He's the best captain.
He's apparently going to be near here in a couple months. Well, not even a couple months, because there's a Niagara Falls Comic Con on the Canadian version of Niagara Falls, and apparently he's going to be there one of the days. But I think I'm going to go on Saturday, and he's going to be there on Sunday. Which I won't even. I figure the amount of time that it would take to wait in line for him, I could probably do like 20 other things.
Yeah, it's you have to really want to see him. Like when I saw him, I had to watch him in a different room, like being videotaped. Because the room just fills up. I mean, so
I
it is
mean,
what it is,
yeah.
but don't let it ruin your whole, like, unless he's your like whole reason you're going, you know, don't let it ruin the other fun.
Exactly. Yeah, and he's not I don't have a man crush on him or anything.
Yeah, like Daryl.
Right. So I'll be doing other things. Well, I probably won't even go the day that he's there.
Daryl would hump his leg. I think
Yeah.
he'd be.
I just don't have that kind of stamina.
Fall down. That's because you might drink coffee with no caffeine in
Yeah.
it.
Without even knowing. It's like, why am I so tired?
Why am I so sleepy? I better go see the doctor. I can't feel my feet.
Yeah. But the Killer Bees are going to be there from WWF. Do you remember them?
No, because I lost the interest in wrestling when me and Barb won tickets to one of those wrestling matches, and we used to watch it. Me and Barb used to watch it like regularly when we were in high school and in college, like early on.
Yeah,
And
that's when
then,
they were from.
yeah, we went to a match with Hulk Hogan, and man, we were sitting on the corner, which was a big mistake, and we were like, what the fuck? The nothing's making contact, and it looks so fucking bad from the angle that we were at that it kind of just shattered. Like we knew it was somewhat fake, but we didn't know it was this fake. It just like ruined. I think from that point, Barb and me stopped watching wrestling, but we used to watch it like a lot. You know, with the Von Erichs and the Hulk Hogans, and I mean, there was two different wrestling programs at the time, and we used to watch it a lot, but not anymore.
It's
But
like, help
it's
me
like
out with
comics.
my.
It's like comics. It's a soap opera if you get into.
Sometimes you need to ask them for at least a little bit of help in maintaining your suspension of disbelief. It's like that with comics sometimes, with the superheroes that only wear, like Nightwing, that only wear the Domino mask and Green Arrow. You're like, I realize that most people would probably recognize them, but don't stage the scene in such a way that it totally points that
Yeah.
out. Like, help me out here a little bit. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm gonna really, if there's any really celebrities there that I'm gonna go after.
You're gonna go after
Go after, that sounded
like a little girl.
stalkerish. Attempt to meet, how's that?
I'm gonna be running and I'll find them.
Yeah.
Tackle.
But Tracy Gold from Carol Seaver from Growing Pains gonna be there.
Yeah, I wonder what she looks like nowadays.
Yeah, can't tell from the website because it's got a picture of her from
From the
Growing Pains.
it's, yeah.
But it looks like across the board, that's what they did. Like, They got pictures of people for what they're known for.
When is that? Is that next weekend? What?
No, it's the
Weeks.
first. It's like the first weekend in June or something. It's
Oh, it's a ways away.
about a month away. So maybe I'll just talk about it some more then.
Yeah, June is going to be a busy fucking con month for me.
Yeah.
I just hope I stay healthy through it all.
Yeah, last year was.
No, last year was good.
Oh,
It's the
okay.
year
Was it the year
before I
before?
got the crud,
It all blends together.
yeah. So you want to talk about Buck Rogers first?
Yeah, because we didn't have it last time.
And that way, when we talk comics, if Daryl wants to join in, I don't think he watched Buck Rogers.
That sounds good. And I do have a couple questions from William Purcell that just popped up on
Twitters.
my page, yeah, on my Facebooks. Because I shared your question.
Ah, I was late. I
Yeah.
was
It didn't even cross my mind till I saw yours.
busy reading some Valiant. Every time I see Arch Armstrong, it reminds me of Knutson. There's one scene where he was they were like Vagabond was out there trying to drink him so they could capture Archer, and he like was pouring a whole keg in his mouth and giving him roofies and getting him all drugged up. And he tr and then they tried to leave, and he's like, "Feeding me beer is like giving spinach to Popeye." It's like it was great.
Yeah, I saw that. That was perfect. And you didn't even have to tag Keith in it. Gil did it for you.
Yeah, somebody else did it.
Yeah. So.
Did you see how many beers he drank yesterday? Good Lord.
No.
That's probably just the ones he registers. I'm like, God dang.
And I'm sure that you and Daryl feel that your advice is falling on deaf ears, but just so that you guys know that it's worth it, those of us that listen sometimes take the advice, even if Keith doesn't. Because part of the way that I'm affording to buy more comics lately is that I am buying less beer myself.
So you're doing the opposite.
So I took your advice, even if he didn't.
But he's doing what he loves, so
Yeah.
he loves drinking. And the human condition.
Yeah. So I still love beer, but figure I consolidate my hobbies somewhat, focus on comics.
Yeah. So episode is sponsored by the Planet of Amazon Women,
Yes.
which just finished. This is such a sexual show. I mean, I think it's like sci-fi sex. Like, it just it's this was an interesting premise, and there's so much funny things that happen in this show, but the premise is that women lure men into this planet and then auction them off because they've lost all their men to another planet that has a lot of resources, and that kind of sums it up. And Buck actually gets caught up in this mess. All negotiations with that planet are going on Earth with Theopolis and Wilma and Doc and the Doctor, and that they're related, but they're not directly related.
Yeah, there's so there's this planet called Ariella, I think you
It's like
how they pronounced it.
nipples.
Not areola, but it's pretty close. And some of the outfits that the woman were wearing may have threatened to expose those. But Ariella, this is a planet that is supposedly known throughout the space, nearby space is a place that you're not allowed to land, that you're not allowed to just dock easily, and it's It's kind of a closed planet in that way.
Oh, it's closed to Earth, especially.
Yeah.
If you're an
Yeah,
Earth
if not in
fighter
general,
pilot,
but
they don't want to land, but if you're a woman seeking a man, I guess they let you land.
yeah, so
Unless you're from Earth.
there's these two women, Nairi and Linnea,
The one in
and
the yellow, good Lord, that was a sexy outfit. Holy shit.
I think that was Nairi. There's a lot of different named female characters in this episode. It's kind of hard to keep them straight, but yeah, the I think it was Nairi was wearing the yellow outfit, and she I looked her up because, like you said, she's really, really pretty, and she seems like she was known for some more television work after this. She was on some. She was on a couple episodes of Dallas as JR's mistress. That was
Ah.
actually her title. It doesn't look like her character. I don't know if, at least in IMDb, that's how she's how the
This,
character is listed. Like,
yeah.
she didn't actually have a name. She was just his mistress. I'm looking up the actress's name while I'm talking about it, but so, yeah, so the two of them, it seems that they kind of sit in space nearby the planet as sort of a trap, and they pretend to be in distress. They put out a distress signal to see who answers it, and when and they wait for a male pilot to answer the distress call, basically.
That's so funny, though. There's like, he sounds sexy. And then they're like, can you come over on your video? Like, who would give a fuck? You know, you're in a distress signal. Can you come up on your video? Do you have
Yeah.
video capability?
Yeah, I do. I guess I can do that. And you could tell by the look on their faces when they see Buck that they're pretty pleased with his appearance, as most of the women throughout the episode are.
Yeah.
Buck's quite a prime catch.
Yeah, and he was, I think this was the first episode, like when he was going to get back to Earth after whatever mission he was on, he was going to go on a date with Wilma. Supposedly, I don't know if it's just one of those fun dates, but he had like some jewelry for her that he wanted to give her.
Yeah, he was apparently planning on cooking her dinner, which
Sweetbread.
yeah. So it's kind of funny that these two women, they tell him, "Can you please tow us back to our planet? We're out of fuel, or our engines are down and stuff like that." And he said, "Well, that no one's allowed to land on Ariella. Are you sure that's okay?" And she said, "Yeah, we'll definitely we'll vouch for you. It's okay." So he takes another planet, and they meet. I think is it one of their is it their father,
Their uncle.
uncle, who seems to just have no problem standing there while his nieces like flirt like crazy with Buck and come on to him. And it turns out that the reason that is because he's part of this little operation that they got going with these two women, where they lure men in so that they can kidnap them and auction them off to the women of a planet called Xanthia. And Xanthia is the planet of the Amazon women, basically, of the title, because Xanthia is a planet that doesn't really have any men left. They've been in this battle with another planet called Ruatha, who they've actually been able to keep them off, but the battles that they've had in the past, pretty much all of the men that they had on Xanthia were kidnapped or killed by Ruatha. So there's a number of them who are warrior women and who were in their armed services and whatnot, but they have dwindling numbers because there was only so many of them, and they also are afraid that the word will get out that the planet is mostly populated by women, and they only have a small force of an army, and that they'll be attacked by other planets besides Ruatha. So Nairi and Linnea, their uncle, they kidnap these men and then they auction them off to the women of Xanthia as their mates. And that's what they're doing with Buck.
Yeah, and Cassius Thorne, who's their uncle, he looks so freaking familiar to me. Like, I was like, who is this guy? And but I never went and looked him up. I was telling Barb, because Barb was laughing at the episode. She thought it was great. She was only in and out, but she was laughing every time she came in. But I was looking at this actor Jay Robinson, and I was like, God dang, that guy looks so freaking familiar. And then I just went to his Wikipedia while you were talking, and I know what I remember him from. This is probably past your time, but he was in Marty Krofft's Dr. Shrinker in the Krofft Super Show. So
I've never in my life heard of that.
it was a Saturday morning thing in the 70s, and I would watch it all the time. And I was like, who is this guy? He looks so familiar, 'cause he's always played like a bad guy. You know, he's got that look. But he's been in like shows like Night Stalker and other movies. He was in Planet of the Apes in the late 70s, and actually in soap operas as a drunk. And I don't know, he's been in a lot of stuff, even Star Trek, the original series. But I remember as Dr. Shrinker on the Krofft Super Show. I just didn't. It's weird when you see an actor and you just like, God, I know that face. Like, I just can't place him. And it was an obscure TV show in the Saturday morning cartoons. It was a live action. Krofft Super Show tend to do like live action with puppets and all kinds of different stuff. I think they were even responsible for Land of the Lost, which that one you're probably familiar with.
Yeah, I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of a lot of things before my time, but whatever you just said, Happy Puppet Man or whatever, I never heard of that.
Dr. Shrinker.
Dr. Shrinker. I mean, I've been hit with Dr. Shrinker's ray a couple
Oh,
times when I jumped into a cold swimming pool, but
Shrinker.
Dr. Shrinker got me again.
What just happened?
But yeah, so meanwhile, there's a lot of stuff that's going on with, like you said at the beginning, with Dr. Theophilus and Dr. Hewer and Wilma in the background. And eventually, Wilma tries to go after and rescue Buck. So she's hailed by the same combination of two women. And but as soon as they find out that the person res or responding to their distress signal is a female, they're like, "Oh, no, we're good. Nope, it's no problem. Are you
Our
sure you
bad,
don't
our
need
bad,
help?"
our bad. We hit the distress signal, and we really didn't. We should have just checked our engine.
It was an accident. We're totally fine.
Although, if I was a woman, I'd bid on a Wilma Deering. I'd still mate with
That was kind of where I was hoping the episode was going, but
hoping.
unfortunately.
The other scene that I really liked, and you kind of briefly mentioned it when they meet the uncle and stuff, but they take him into a room and they're like, we want to give you food and we want to give you wines. And they're like convincing Buck to drink it, and they're spiking everything to knock him out. And he's like, why are you trying to drug me? You know, like, why you want me to smell this flower? Why do you want me to do this? And he's like, something fishy's going on. So Cassius or whatever his name is comes in with the gun, but he can't fire on him because he's like prized property. He's gonna get him like 10,000 credits or whatever. And so they get into a fight with Buck, you know, two females fighting Buck, and Buck's holding his own. But she's got like this contraption on her belt that zaps him and knocks him out cold. And then he goes up for auction, and during the auction is my favorite scene in the whole freaking episode. Like, I could watch that a couple times because there's like all these women like around Buck, and they're like bidding on him, and they start lo you don't think he's gonna make his $10,000, but then Cassius tells him, why don't you walk around a little bit?
show it off.
Yeah, show flaunt it and show it off. And Buck's like, I ain't gonna help you out. And then he like has these handcuffs and he zaps him, and so then Buck starts putting on his sexy walk and walks around and gets up to like 20,000 credits
And catch
because,
it, strips him down.
yeah, he does. He rips off his shirt. That's gotta be one of the best scenes in Buck. I mean, the funniest scenes. I just thought it was hilarious.
And they keep cutting to the faces of the different women, like,
Yeah,
look at that man.
and they're looking like they just want to lick him.
Look at that fine specimen.
But the mother of she has two daughters, and she wants to actually bid high to ma so Buck can mate with her daughter, because this is just how they ha it happened, because they have no men.
Yeah,
So
she's the leader of Xanthia, I think.
oh, like prime minister, I think, right?
Yeah.
And she bids like really high, like 20,000 credits. But when Buck actually gets into the girl's room, the girl is like, I gonna have she wants to overthrow her mom, because she knows that shit ain't right.
Yeah, because Bucks immediately says to her, look, I am not down with this. I'm not okay with the situation. He's expecting her to put up a protest, and she's pretty much like, no, that's fine. I don't like this either, because we had had a scene earlier, so we were expecting this with the leader of Xanthia and her daughter on Xanthia, where we understand that her daughter is not okay with the situation, and that her daughter's actually openly admitting to her mother that she's putting together a resistance force against her mother. So we know as soon as, while Buck's going off about how he's not down with the situation, that she's going to be happy to cooperate with him. And try to create a different situation. But behind all of this, there's a lot of political machinations, because Earth is concerned with any sort of involvement, and they want to stay out of the situation, because they don't want to risk being
Losing.
swept into this
It's
battle
basically
between these planets.
to lose a. Earth does not. I mean, Earth is being like a jackass and not want to being involved, because they don't want to interrupt their flow of a natural resource that helps them, with energy and stuff like that. I think it's used in ships too. I don't know. But they, if they interrupt or interfere, they could cause a lot of problems, and then their defense would go down entirely, I think.
And isn't it that the resource that they're interested in, it actually comes from Uatha, so they don't want to intervene on Xanthia's behalf?
Yeah.
So there actually comes down to a pretty tense scene where Buck has the daughter of the leader of Xanthia in his ship with him, and Wilma and other Earth ships are telling him to stand down for these political reasons. And Buck keeps telling them, no, you don't understand the whole situation. Can't you just trust me? And Earth's like, no way. And
Well,
Wilma even is.
even Wilma, that surprised me, because he's like, trust me, in the relationship that they've developed, where Buck has saved the Earth like 3 times already. Like, why wouldn't she trust him? But she orders that major to fire on his ship.
Yeah. And the only thing I can think of is that they're still kind of underestimating him, because they're assuming that he doesn't, still assuming that he doesn't understand planetary politics in the 31st century.
Yeah, that's true.
And now I forget how they end up together, but Wilma and Buck and think her name is Linnea. I keep calling her the daughter of the leader of
I got
Xanthia.
lost in all the names because there were a lot
Yeah.
of females in this.
There's Linnea, and then there's Jael and Rena and Nairi.
And there was that one girl that was bidding that actually was riding the horse that overheard the conversation, you know, that they were having.
Yeah, and I think that that's Rena. For the sake of the episode, we'll call her Rena and the daughter of the leader of Xanthia,
Yeah.
Linnea. Because it's one or the other. But Rena, she's a dark-haired woman. She's present at the bidding, and she's upset that she lost out on the bid. And so she's actually eavesdropping on Buck and Linnea when they're talking about, their plans. And so she goes to the leader of Xanthia and says, "I have evidence that I can share with you, and but what I want out of it is I want the Earth Man. I'm the losing bidder, and I want to be the winner." So Buck and Linnea are fired on by Earth, but eventually they end up with Wilma in a transport, I think, because she's captured them. And Buck shows her, "I really do know what I'm doing." He shows her a fragment of the mineral that they need from Ruatha, and lets her know that Xanthia itself actually has plentiful resources of this mineral as well, so that they don't have to be beholden to the relationship with Ruatha. And that one of the funniest scenes, actually, was, other than the auction, was our old buddy Twiggy had some good lines this time once
Yeah,
again.
he did.
Because there's Theophilus, and then there's another artificial intelligence or whatever, like Theophilus.
Yeah, from the other planet. And he's got a real evil voice.
He's a pretty jerky personality. But Twiggy walks in on Theophilus and Hugh are talking, and he says, "You two look like leftover dinners." And then he says, Buck is, because Buck's trapped on a planet without men, and he calls him a lucky stiff. And Theophilus says, "Stiff?
Stiff.
What's a stiff?" And Buck and Twiggy says, "You don't want to know." And apparently Twiggy had like some run-ins with the other the guy, like Theophilus from the other planet, and because he says he's not called Twiggy for no reason or something, and he says, he's walking out and he's laughing to himself, "I gave him a t tweak I'll never forget, tweak tweak."
Yes, I enjoyed this episode a lot more than the previous one.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a return to form, and I know that ultimately the resolution is that the men that were kidnapped, like I said, some of them were killed, but the men that were kidnapped in Xanthia are freed and reunited with the people, with the women of Xanthia, so their situation is a little less dire.
All because their planet has the resource that Earth needs too. And the other colony or the ones that they're negotiating with, that's how they're able to negotiate. They're not aware of that. I forget what the rock is, but it being readily available on that planet, so that's how they're able to make the deal. It all comes down to natural resources.
So Earth doesn't necessarily do the right thing for altruistic reasons. They just are able to be convinced by Buck to do the right thing, because,
Yeah.
which I guess politically it's a delicate balancing act. But so looks like our next episode's fairly promising as well.
Yeah, we got different strokes appearing on the
Yes.
show.
We have a Gary Coleman appearance on the next episode, Cosmic Whiz Kid.
Yeah, they have a lot of cool guests on these shows. I always enjoy Just looking at the credits to see if it's somebody that I've seen before.
Yeah, I do. I am enjoying that aspect of it as well. So, and then after that, we get the return of Princess Ardala.
That's what I'm really looking forward to.
So, we got some good episodes coming up. And even more so. So,
So you want to.
oh, interesting. Sorry, I'm just looking ahead here. We'll talk some more about this as well, but just as one more teaser, the episode following that one has guest star Dorothy Stratton, who was a Playboy playmate, an actress who was murdered by her boyfriend, and that was the subject of a movie, a couple movies, one called Death of a Centerfold, in which Jamie Lee Curtis played her, and then the one that I've seen, Star 80, which
Oh,
had,
I've seen that.
Mariel Hemingway as
Yeah.
Dorothy Stratton, Eric Roberts, who,
That's an old one. I thought that one would be past your time, but
no, 1983.
I had no interest in that movie, but then I saw like nakedness in it and I like was all over it, you know. When that came out, I was like, I gotta watch this. There's nudity.
I only saw it a few years ago. I actually came across it in a project I was doing for the Critical Masses website, where I was watching, like, I was finding old newspapers and like looking at the movie listings, the movie theater listings,
Yeah.
and watching the show, or watching whatever episodes. God, I can't talk. Watch whatever movies were listed, like three or four of the movies that were playing in the theaters at that time. And so I just ended up watching that. I had never even heard of it, and it actually turns out to be a pretty good movie. I mean, Eric Roberts, he's played some like over the top kind of roles, but his he plays the boyfriend that murders her, and he's actually does some really good acting in the film, and as well as Mariel Hemingway. And it was interesting that a lot of people thought that she had gotten breast implants just to play that character.
Yeah.
But and it was just a rumor for years and years and years, and it wasn't until like maybe like 7 or 8 years ago that she said that she actually that she actually had had the breast implants before she was even cast in the role, but then ended up later having them removed when they ruptured.
That sounds like a pretty cool project that you were doing.
Yeah, it was fun.
So I'm kind of doing something like that with every character that appears in a book. I'm just researching them. It's really interesting. Like, just follow shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done one in a while. But if you go to criticalmassesmedia.com and in the film drop down, it's called Back to the Cinema. And I haven't done one in a few years. But I would do one like once a month or so, because it was a lot of movie watching and stuff. But I would find old newspapers on of from like New York or Boston or whatever that would have interesting films
Yeah.
showing, and I'd watch like three or four of the movies on the listings. So,
I always thought she had a manly face.
Mariel Hemingway.
Yeah. Because she was in Superman 4.
Yeah.
A little bit. She does, a little
It's just the jaw structure. We were talking
Yeah.
about Star 80. We just finished well, Daryl's joining us, and we just finished talking about Buck Rogers, and we were talking about future episodes and started to go down this path of an actress that's in an upcoming episode that there's a couple movies that were based on her. Star 80, and what was the other one? Death of a Centerfold.
Yeah, Dorothy Stratton. She's
Yeah.
actually in the Buck
Oh,
Rogers
yeah.
episode.
I remember
And
that.
yeah, she was the August 1979 Playboy playmate.
I remember Star 80 being the dirty movie.
Me and Daryl are relatively close in age. So I had just told Chris the same thing. I was like, I had no interest in this movie whatsoever, but no. I heard about it was nasty, and I was like, I must see this movie.
We were desperate. We didn't have porn, free porn on TV.
Yeah.
Or no computer. So we took what we can get. Man face or not, we'll take it.
Hey, I mean, I'm younger than you guys, but I still, when I was in high school, internet wasn't what it was today. So I did have internet when I was in high school, but I remember sitting there for like a half an hour watching a sitcom because I wanted to see one image download.
You're talking to the king here that would watch a scrambled station just to see a tit. Like, it would be like on one of the stations you couldn't receive on cable. Mm-hmm. And it would just, like, there was this adult station, and me and my brother would go to it, and you would just see fuzz. But every once in a while, you'd see a tit or something like that.
I would stare at it.
And yeah, I'd stare at the, and all you would hear is static. You'd hear, but you'd see booby.
When they had WHT, it was a box, and it made a lot of noise when you tried to turn it on, and it had nightcap. And I had to sneak and watch it because I'm a dirty, dirty bird. I wanted to see that stuff as soon as we got it. I was like, what is that part of the thing? And they were like, it's a part that you can't ever look at.
There was one time where we went on a vacation to see my dad's friend in Denver, and he had like Playboy TV.
You probably came on
the spot. Mistakenly... They said, oh, we don't have a bedroom for you guys, so you guys have to sleep in the living room with the TV.
Oh, man.
So my brother were in there, and we were like, okay, we'll be real quiet. Just turn all the volume down.
We can do this.
We can do this.
We won't get caught. We'll just say we didn't know how to turn the TV on.
Yeah. Lie. We didn't know the TV was on. It must have been an alarm or something.
We'll lie. But it's worth it just to see it. And that was back when they didn't shave.
That's right.
So it was just hair. And I thought I was looking at something amazing. You know, like not like now when they do the landing strip, but then it was just hair.
Maybe this should be called retro porn.
Let's see the memories that you made, though. Oh, yeah. Stays with you all these years later.
Somewhere Keith is judging us.
He is. I'm a married man.
But that's what happens with that that extra effort you have to put into it.
Oh, I worked hard for it. I worked hard for it. Sweating. You'd be sweating and scared because every sound sounds like your parents are coming to get you.
Especially when you're watching fuzz. I'm lucky I never got caught.
Oh, me either.
I had porn in my house. In high school, and they must have found it because I had it stashed.
Of course, we all did.
But they never said anything. Do you know what I mean?
Because who wants to have that conversation with their child?
But I had it stashed in a place. I don't know how the hell they found it, but they had to have found it.
I mean, a part of them is like proud because, they want to know about the sexual, you know.
Part of them is proud.
Part of them is proud because, you know, you when those people that don't do that, they usually bury bodies in the backyard when they don't when they don't develop normally like they're supposed to. At least we had shame. We hit it.
They'd rather find that than like a couple dead squirrels.
Exactly.
It's like,
it's just porn. It's just boobies. It's all right. He's not a killer or anything like that. I was worried for a minute. I thought it was a body. We didn't know.
It's just a videotape.
It's just a videotape. Ooh, it's disgusting, but still, it's a videotape. It's fine. It's fine.
That's my boy.
We will never speak of it again. There will be no discussion of this in this house.
I just know that uncomfortable conversation had to happen between my parents. I know they don't listen to this show, but it had to because... I could just picture my mom saying, Manuel, we should say something to him. They're having this long conversation. We should really talk to him. And my dad's like, no, just let it go.
Don't shame the boy. See, that's what they don't understand. Don't shame the boy. You don't want him to not want to do it. He's supposed to. Just just know to hide it like normal people.
Yeah. And I came out okay. That's a relative term, but
yeah. There's no bodies in your past. You're fine.
There's no bodies in my past.
You're fine. Hey, listen, as long as you haven't killed anybody and buried them in the backyard, it's all aces. You're fine.
That's right. So you had a few questions that you wanted to talk about, Chris?
Yeah, we got a few. William Purcell, they're all from William Purcell. The first one was, in light of the new X-Men movie coming out, are you going to review the Days of Future Past series? Yeah, I know I hadn't planned on it myself.
I've never read that today.
Oh, you haven't?
Oh, you should. I bought it.
I've been out of the
X-Men business.
Of all the Marvel, like me and Daryl were just talking about this, and I was just saying I go in and out of Marvel a lot. But of all the least interested in the X-Men of every, you know, character property mm-hmm. that Marvel put out. Until recently, like now I'm getting at least half of the X-Men books, but I didn't used to read it, so I missed out on that.
I'd be curious. It's so short, though. The story is like, it's only two issues.
Oh, I'll read it. Is it?
But I'm just curious what somebody who hasn't read all that stuff.
Well, if Comixology wouldn't have fucked up my iPad, I would download it right now. Impulse buy.
That's true. That's true, them bastards.
Yeah, I think I read it originally in an essential.
Yeah. Fuckers just wiped out my DC app, too.
Did they really?
Yeah, I had to log back in to restore from the cloud, but they knocked out my... You know when you go in there and look at what the last couple things you purchased?
Yeah.
That's what I was looking at to know what I was going to talk about. Those bastards.
That sucks.
Those Klingon bastards. They killed my son.
So what were you saying, Chris?
I think I've read it a couple times because I read like back maybe like 15 years ago or something. I read through a lot of the X-Men run on Essentials. And then when I got Marvel Digital Unlimited, I went through at one point and reread most of those in color. But yeah, it's not a huge event or crossover like now that you get nowadays. It's just like Daryl said, a couple of issues. But yeah, I mean, I would be interested to see what you thought about it too, Mike.
Yeah, I'll have to try to track them down.
Compare it to the movie.
Yeah, I just wonder if people were disappointed when they ran to buy this, thinking that it's like a trade, like a big event.
I thought it was, and you said it was two issues. That's Mm-mm. a pretty easy investment.
It really wasn't.
Is the Days of Future Past, is it the one where on the cover Wolverine's in the spotlight and there's pictures of all the mm-hmm. X-Men?
That cover is so iconic because it's been reused.
I have read it. Countless times. I just don't remember it.
Yeah, they put Kitty Pryde's mind into the older Kitty Pryde, adult.
Yeah, I have read it. It's just not fresh in my head. I'll try to read it if I have the patience to go through the Comixology app now.
It's so quick. I really think people were like, "Is this all?" I think mm-hmm. even for the other trades when they did it, I think they added some back issue stuff to try kind of fill it up.
I think it's the kind of thing that had an impact that it did because of when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was so influential. People talk about it today because of how influential at the time it was. But
yeah, and they've been trying to redo this thing over and over for like every year after that. Like they had Ahab come to the present time, and they had the Hounds, and Excalibur wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for Days of the Future Past, because you had Rachel come from the future, that timeline, and come to the present
mm-hmm.
because she was in that. So a lot of stuff that happened in the Avengers, I mean, the X-Men books, as the years went by, was because of just that two-issue story.
Yeah, it kind of kickstarted that whole tradition in X-Men comics, especially mm-hmm. to have characters coming from the future, Cable and all that kind of stuff.
even now, even the I think even the X-Men thing with having the five of them come back from the past to the present. Like you could see that some of those seeds are because of what they did with Days of the Future Past, with having somebody come back, how does it change the course of history? You know, how does it change the course of the mutant life? Like, is it, does it save the mutant kind, or does it hurt mutant kind more because it changed the timeline?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like something you expect to be a part of X-Men comics now. So then he also has just has how about some Martian Manhunter talk? Which for me, I mean, he's not a character I have a huge amount of history with. That's really outside of the JLA. I never was really a character I gravitated toward too much. I don't know about you guys.
I read some of I did read some of the he had a series for a little bit, which what I can't think of
John
any writer.
Ostrander and Mandrake. Plus, he had a deluxe format one prior to that, which was just like two issues. I've read them all, but I don't remember a lot of them.
That's the problem. I don't I could not
Because
name.
everything I remember is mostly, I think he works well in the team. Do you know what I
Yeah,
mean?
he
He's
does.
always been, the heart and soul of the Justice League of America.
Like, so I don't know. Like, I can't. I'm trying to remember. Like, I know there was stuff with Mikkel, I think, was in that.
Yeah,
But it
I think so.
was more the way it was written. John Ostrander went with the metaphysical thing of him.
Yeah, and there was stuff dealing with fire and overcoming that, and there was just weird shit.
Joe Kelly did a really great run, I think in the 2000s when he had Jay, when he was writing the Justice League books, where he dealt with Manhunter actually got over his fear of fire. Like, he went to therapy to get through the fear of it, and it didn't affect him as much. He even started dating, he dated a fire based character. But they had messed with his head or something. But he had invited them to a barbecue. Like, you saw him in a, he was in a Hawaiian shirt, and he was, and in the cover he was barbecuing steak. And that was to show how he had changed. And he was with Blaze. I think it, he was trying to
Blaze the demon?
the bad girl. She was a bad guy, villain,
A super the
villainous.
Superman villain, Blaze.
Yeah, I think it was that one. And he was trying to rehabilitate her, and he had went off to do that. And when he called them back, they found out that he was basically in a relationship with her, and they were like in the suburbs, and he was barbecuing steaks on the grill, and the fire didn't affect him.
Right.
That was when they had Plastic Man a part of the team too. It had Plastic Man, Superman, Batman. That was when Batman and Wonder Woman were kind of teasing the idea of maybe getting together.
That was a good run. I like
Yeah, it
that.
really was.
But we had
Hot
like
one. Yeah.
Martian Manhunter, American Secrets from 1992, which was that prestige format thing by Gerald Jones and Eduardo Barreto. And then we had the mini series in 1988 prior to that, which was a four issue by J.M. DeMatteis and Mark Badger.
I think I read that too.
I read them all except for the I actually didn't read the Ostrander and the Tom Mandrake, which was the longest running one. I have some miscellaneous issues of it, you know, like towards the end. I must have jumped on it at the very end, but never read it. So yeah, I might dig up a few of the early issues and see if I enjoy it. Because, man, back in the day, Ostrander and Mandrake were my favorite because they did Firestorm. They also did the Spectre series back then was freaking awesome. That was
That's
like
right.
that was to me the best Spectre series since Adventure Comics, where he was like using scissors to cut people's heads off and stuff. It was awesome stuff, but this is good, good stuff. I mean,
I
he's like,
like Miss Martian.
yeah, I loved her in Teen Titans.
And she was good on Young Justice too.
And she
But
played a part in the recent miniseries, like in 2006. But she was good in animation, definitely. One of my favorite
Yeah.
characters.
Looks like there's so I'm looking at one thing I do know about Martian Manhunter is if you want to dig into stuff about him, there's a website called Idlehead of Diabolu.
Diablo.
Who would find that?
ID IDOL hyphen head.
That is a crazy name. Like, who would, if you're a
Yeah,
Martian Manhunter
I
fan, who the hell would think to look that up?
Idlehead of Diabolu. I only know it because the guy that does it, he goes by Diabolu Frank. And he made some appearances on the Fire and Water podcast. He's friends with those guys, so that's how I became aware of his blog. He does some other blogs too, but that's just got like anything and everything you'd ever want to know about Martian Manhunter.
I hope he pings it or tags it, Martian Manhunter's name to his blog, because I would never have found that.
Yeah. So it's I
It's probably an
IEL
obscure
hyphen.
reference to the skull or something.
Yeah, I think it does.
Probably. The Martian skull, you know how it's shaped a certain way?
Yeah,
It's
it does have some reference to
the problem of doing an obscure reference is you get the hardcore fans, but then the people that want to learn, you'll never get them into your site because
Yeah.
they won't know what to look for.
It makes my promotional hat go off. Like I know it's cool and all, but it makes my promotional hat go off where I'm thinking, well, how do you get that to people who maybe saw something like the animated thing or whatever and they just thought to themselves, I want to learn about Martian
Yeah,
Manhunter.
like the Eye of Agamotto motto or whatever. If you don't know Doctor Strange, you're not gonna get that. You
You're
know what I
not gonna
mean?
get it, no.
Yeah. His other blogs are more directly titled. He's got a Justice League Detroit blog that's just called Justice League Detroit and
They get shit on a lot, but I like that Detroit League. It was different.
Yeah, he seems to like that kind of stuff because he's got a Diana Prince's Wonder
I
Woman.
love it. I still will never forget when Aquaman punched him in the face. He was like, "You weren't ready." He said, "You weren't ready." Bam.
Was like having two adults, Aquaman and Martian Manhunter, and a bunch of new newbies.
Aquaman gave them so much shit.
Yeah.
He really did. He was like, "You always have to be prepared." I'd have been like, "Yo, fuck Aquaman, I'm out." You start punching me in the face like that out of nowhere. You're like punching the balls. You're not ready.
Just having lunch or sitting down, relaxing, all
Yeah.
of a sudden Aquaman comes flying out of the shadows. Like, you're not
What
Batman. What are you doing, man?
are you doing, man? Calm down.
He was pretty dark in that phase,
He
like
was.
all business, all business.
All business. He was a pain in the ass, is what he was.
Mike, this is for you, I think. He says he's looking forward to some more Doctor Strange and Defenders discussions. How far back will you go on the issues?
I will get back into that, but I have ADD. I'm
You have
like,
moved on.
no, this is what happens is I start reading some stuff and that comic leads me on a trail to another comic.
Leaves you on
And
a trail
Marvel
to
is
the next
horribly
one.
bad for that in the Bronze Age and stuff because they'll lead you to another comic with the little asterisk, or they'll introduce a character and say, you can see more of this character in this book. And then I just go off, and it's like me at a Comic Con. Like, you can't keep me with the group
No.
because I just like wander off and I'm like Homer Simpson with donuts.
We never make it far. Like we go like two steps and then the three of us will start somewhere, me, Keith, and you, and then the next thing you know, we have branched off. I see somebody I know and start talking, and then you'd have wandered off to another comic you found on the, or something.
Yeah.
Or you saw
Mike
some
sees Matt
sexy
Kent.
sketches. Yeah, he sees Matt Kent or some sexy sketches. He's like, "Oh, I gotta buy that." And then
They at least know they can either find me at Sholies
I know
or
where to find him
Andrew Peep Boy
eventually.
or
I
something.
know where to Keith would just find some books. Like, he likes every, he likes so much, like, such obscure stuff that he'll find.
Gotta look for the guy that's selling the fart book. And
yeah,
and...
like, he'll find something obscure. Every con, Keith will find the most obscure stuff. That's what he does. So it's just funny. It's hilarious.
You know each other's personality.
We do. We do. We only get back together when it's time to eat.
Yeah, we don't need no cell phones.
No.
We know how to find each other.
Well, you know what? Barb is always the contact person because yeah. She's the only one that looks at her phone.
She's the one that organizes everything.
She's the only one that will look at her phone no matter what. So everybody texts her.
She's the oracle.
She is the oracle. She's like, time to eat lunch. When y'all, what do y'all want to eat? We all go through Barb. Let's meet here. That's how we figure it out.
Maybe I'll do a couple of like Doctor Strange bites, like I'm doing with the DC Noise bites, just to get some of that.
It's weird though, because you know, before they did the Nick Fury book, it was a Doctor Strange book.
Yes, yes, I've been picking up some of those because
I have them. I have some of them digitally.
That doesn't count.
Weird. Weird, man. It's weird.
Those are gems to find, though. They're worth.
They are. I'm thinking I'm reading some Fury stuff.
And they link so they're introducing so many things. Like, mm-hmm. you'll see first appearance of this character, first appearance of this character, and a lot of times they're obscure, but they're still first appearances.
Oh, and the stories are so weird.
Yeah.
So finally, I think I'm just going to refer him to what you guys recorded last night, but because he's asking what we think of the new Comixology app and their buy up from Amazon, which
Pitchforks of Flames.
We talked about it briefly. Fucking, I'm not gonna read the damn X-Men now.
And digital comics didn't exist in the period of time that this show covers, really.
Right.
But so I think that wraps up the questions.
All right, we can get into comics. Why don't you go first, Chris?
But yeah, well, more specifically though, it's DC Noise Weekly, right? Is that?
Oh, the
new calling it. Where you guys talked about that.
The show is, and don't panic because if you listen to DC Noise, like I'm getting so much freaking feedback. Like, where's Keith? Is Keith? Where's Keith? The world ending. You get the cult of Keith, like, and they just like fall apart. They're like, "What do you mean no more DC Noise? What is this weekly shit?"
I tell Keith, all he never believes us. I always tell Keith, I said, "People be looking for you. He just goes off. Oh, I can't do it this week. I got to go do something." See, we try to fight for him to be on the show.
Yeah, just for anybody that listens to DC Noise, DC Noise is not going away. Nah. We just have harder time getting together, but we'll still put out episodes when we get together. And then me and Daryl are doing a weekly show, kind of like just what came out this week, the comics, any news, and that kind of stuff. That's the spotlight, weekly spotlight. And then I do DC Noise Bites, which I love to do because it falls into my pattern where I'll like read a blurb or read about a character, and then I fall into another book.
Exactly.
So it's got my ADD in there, so I'm loving that. But those three are on the same feed. But if you just want Keith, you just look for DC Noise episode blah. If you want Spotlight, that's me and Daryl talking comics. And if you don't want to hear comics, don't listen.
No, don't listen to that one.
DC Noise Bites is very similar, except that they're short. They're less than 20 minutes.
Yeah, if you see a two-hour one, that would usually be the DC Noise one.
Yeah.
That's when we're all together. And we don't have any pressure. Nobody has to read anything for the episode. There's no pressure to include any comic talk. We just talk whatever we want to.
We don't even watch each other's movies.
We don't even watch each other. We argue about the movies for about an hour. And that's what usually winds up happening. So that's what we have for that. So, you know, nothing's changing with DC Noise. It's still going to be there. I can't do it without Keith. I got to fight with my brother. I can't do it without Keith.
Yeah, it's like the phrase DC noise has come to mean something totally different than it originally did.
That's it. It's true.
But in all fairness, it's going back to what it was originally started out as. Like me and Eric, we talk about weekly books.
That's what y'all did, yeah.
Yeah, the weekly format, yeah. And initially with I mean, I've heard some episodes when it was just you and Keith when you brought it back.
Yeah,
It
and
was
it
kind of
wasn't
like a
very much like that. It's just when you
yeah,
got all
same
three of
format.
us together that the magic was created.
It's a chaos,
The
yay.
thing that the three of us have a show that's about absolutely nothing. I mean, people enjoy it, but man, it's about nothing. There's no plot. There's no rules. It just goes
No,
wherever the fuck it goes,
we
and it
never
lasts
know.
2 hours.
We never know what it's gonna. We never know when it's where it's gonna go. We
Yeah.
used to fight against it, but it's like, what's the
I
point?
used to prepare, and then I said, "Fuck no! I don't need. I'm not gonna read anything because I don't know what the hell we're gonna
I
do."
would run to read shit ahead of time, and then I would think after the show is done, 4 hours of us, and then I go, "Why the fuck did I read all that when we didn't even talk about not one thing? Not one."
That's enough of DC noise. It just we did talk about, like Chris said, the di we talked about for half hour at least, right?
Yeah, we can't. We really got into it, and
Yeah.
it'll be. I mean, I know more stuff will come out as the weeks progress with this. I'm pretty sure with the way people are, some are angry, some are happy. You know, Alan is happy because he comes from the creator side of it, who's put stuff on Comixology, and he's saying they get more money, they get more, they don't have to share any of the cut with Apple, so he's happy about it. So.
Actually, though, man, I listened to a show called Comics for Fun and Profit, so there's a shout out. But they had an interview with the writer from The Voice of the Dark, or you know that series that's coming out from Image Comics. He basically was born, you know, without arms, and he paints with his mouth.
Oh, I remember that,
But
yeah.
we actually saw him in Baltimore. I don't know if you saw him, but I did.
I didn't think I did.
But he was actually painting an awesome, like, Avengers thing with his mouth. It was pretty freaking amazing.
Yeah, he's
But
amazing.
he was talking about Comixology, like he's 6 months into his title and he hasn't even got paid yet. Or nor does he have any insight. And you know how Image is more about the creators? Do you know what,
Yeah.
you pay your flat fees and all that stuff, and the rest is kind of your profit, right?
Well, that yeah, and their digital comes later. Like you don't get your digital as people buy. You don't get a check every time somebody you get whatever 15 cents or whatever every time somebody buys something from
Yeah.
digitally. They get a check. I think at the end of the every 6 months or something like that, and they add that up
Maybe
and
now they get paid more frequently that, you
they get
know,
residuals, they call it.
yeah, Amazon's taking over.
That's the thing to see, like, will they? Like, I mean, people are saying that's the case, but they
You
just did this.
do not know what's gonna happen.
We don't
I'm
know.
sure a lot of people ain't gonna get paid for like 6 months now. Like
I,
that happens when companies acquire other companies, things get
right.
lost.
'Cause what happens if they say, yeah, we don't have to, you don't have to give money to Apple, but we're still going to keep that whatever percentage
Yeah.
because we need it to pay for more space on the feed or whatever. Like we need more money because we're paying for whatever. You know what happens then? 'Cause you're still paying out anyway.
Right.
And on top of it, you're not only are you still paying the same, but you miss out on those buys where people have, and there's a lot of people that have Apple products. You miss out on that audience that would have bought it a lot quicker.
Yeah,
So.
I'm gonna probably cut over. I'm gonna try to anyways, just so I could get my $5 gift certificate.
I already spent some of it already. I'm almost done.
So you've converted over already.
I didn't have a choice. I went to online to look, and it was already it's already kind of converted when you log in. It's just the app that I had to do, but it's already there. Like, that $5 is already there.
Yeah,
and you just use it. I used it for, they had Nova, the Annihilation storyline on sale, so I bought those.
Oh, you hadn't read the Annihilation?
I have, but I'll see, and that's what I'm. I will rebuy stuff because I like. I rebuy.
Oh, you probably read it in paper, and
oh,
you
got, I read it all in paper.
You got rid of it, and you want to reread it.
And I want to reread it all again.
Yeah,
I get ADD with digital, just like just like Mike does with paper. I'm the same way with digital.
Yeah, well, let's get back to the retro. So, Chris, you want to lead us off?
Sure. I'll say that quickly, though, that it didn't really affect me. I never did too much with the digital, at least with buying stuff from Comixology, so it didn't affect me too much. But I'll be interested to see if it creates a competitor. You know, if someone comes up to provide to iOS, what other people, what they used to, you know, because it creates a space for someone to create a new company and offer that. That's okay. That's okay with the. With the 30% that Apple takes, you know?
Right. That's true.
So it'll be interesting to see. But I guess Amazon, I mean, they're wanting to try to drive people to their Kindle and get them to spend money on the other content that people can get through the Kindle, the movies, the TV shows and things like that, and their Prime membership and stuff. But I don't know. I think it's a bit of a gamble on their part.
It is.
So... All right, well, back to the past. I, this week, got my first Valiant Masters.
Right, nice.
Wow. First one that I picked up, I got the Rye volume in time for Valiant to relaunch, or well, not relaunch, but put out their Rye book. I thought I would check it out.
Mm-hmm.
So this is... This is volume one, and it is 8 issues. I'm just going to talk about issue number one. It worked out good that they commissioned a new introduction by the writer of these issues, David Michelinie, because within that he talks about how he was hired to write this series and how Rye had actually been introduced by Jim Shooter as a flipbook in Magnus Robot Fighter 5 through 8. And Jim Shooter had established the world of Rye. So he's got like 4 or so paragraphs that summarize the background of that was established in those flipbooks, which, to be honest, I think it would have been a little difficult to jump into issue number one. It would have taken me a little bit longer to know what was going on if this introduction wasn't there and if he hadn't introduced or if he hadn't included that in his introduction.
So they didn't include the 9 issues, the flip books?
I think it was 4 issues, but yeah, no, those aren't included in here.
That's kind of a bummer because they would have had the rights to that anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how that worked out. if there's some problems because it was a flip book with Magnus. I don't know how that worked out, but I mean, Michelinie does do a good job of summarizing the situation and talking about the challenge, you know, of how Jim Shooter handled him the situation and how he was challenged by it, and it talks about the situation, even though it was like a short run, and you know, takes you back to the time period when he was writing them originally, but it does. I mean, it does. It would have been better to have read them, but he does do a pretty good job of summarizing it and getting you ready to read issue one. And so the rest of the creative team besides him on this issue is Joe St. Pierre on pencils, Charles Barnett III as inker, and colors and letters by Jade Mode. The cover's actually by David Laffam and Bob Layton.
Talk about a creator, though, like Michelinie, that meant so much to me, like with his amazing Spider-Man and Iron Man and God, his unknown soldiers, and that guy could do no wrong, man.
Yeah, to me, he was the Spider-Man connection.
Yeah,
you
Spider-Man
know,
Wolf
you
in
know
there.
how, Daryl, we talked about Alan Grant, how much he meant to us on the DC side. Well, on the Marvel side, for me, I think it was Michelinie. I just loved his stuff.
Yeah, I'm thinking of all the Spider-Man books alone that I
Yeah.
own because of that he
That
did.
was he did the McFarlane runs and all the and he was writing. They were twice monthly back in the day too. He was doing like slot. But
Yeah, the only
that
time I've ever really had a mail order subscription to a comic was Amazing Spider-Man, when Eric Larson was doing the pencils. And he was still writing it. Eventually, Eric Larson would end up writing his own stuff, but that's how where I came familiar with him originally. Were you gonna say something, Mike? Sorry.
No,
Okay.
I'm all good.
All right. So even an even briefer summary is that this takes place in the year 4001, and Japan is even more culturally isolated, or in addition to being culturally isolated, they've also become physically isolated. And for 40 generations, a computer intelligence called Grandmother has regulated Japanese society. And there's been one physical protector of Japan named Rai, and the protector's given super abilities to do their job. And the Rai that we follow is Toru Nakadai, and he's had the mantle passed to him by his father Rentaro. And Toru didn't really want the burden of this responsibility. He wanted to be a husband and a father. He had a baby, but when Earth's attacked by aliens, this puts pressure on him to take on the mantle of Rai to push them back. But as a result of this invasion, Japan is further isolated physically. It's launched into space and becomes a artificial moon orbiting the Earth. So Rai's relationship with his father, the former Rai, is estranged, and he's caught up in this situation where there's two factions within Japan. There is the humanist government that don't want to be so reliant on computers, and then and they're in power. And then there's the Restoration Underground, who is a who are like rebels that want to go back to the totally computer controlled Japan run by the grandmother. And that last part with the different factions and stuff seems to be where some stuff that Michelinie added to the situation when he took it over from Shooter, and it creates a nice conflict at the center of the story, because Rai, he's supposed to be just the protector of Japan, so he feels a responsibility to protect all the people of Japan, and is trying not to take a side in the Civil War. But in any given battle, he intervenes, but tries to intervene in whatever side is going to turn the tide in whatever battle towards the side that he think is going to help maintain peace. And on top of that, his wife is a warrior for this for the humanist government. So they have like an estranged relationship as well. He's kind of like, in the same way that Japan is all alone in space, he's kind of a man apart. Doesn't This responsibility he's taken on has left him in a place where he no longer has that family, no longer really has like a strong relationship with anybody. And no one really knows, and between the healers and the underground, they never really know if he's going to show up on their side or the enemy's side, if they're going to help him or not. So the underground, they They stage a raid on the government, and they try to attack grandmother, and they're repelled, but and the humanists think that they've been successful, but ultimately they were just after a little piece of the of grandmother. And at the end of the issue, whereas like the humanists and things, they feel like that they've been successful. We see that the two of these two individuals, a man and a woman, are actually feel like they've been successful, that they that they have this tool. It's a circuit that they've taken from the grandmother unit, and they have some plan for it. But by the end of the issue, Rai has kind of weighted his side towards the humanists more so. He's sort of in a battle, sort of forced to take their side a bit more, but he can't really get a break. Because even though he, for the first time, feels comfortable somewhat walking down the street in the Capitol with his people, a man and a woman throw some dirt and hit him in the face because he's, because of the damage caused in the battle, the man is out of, or is going to have to be working even more and away from his family. So no matter what he does, even though he's supposed to be the protector of the people of Japan, the people of Japan kind of ostracize him. And he's wondering if there's really a place for him. So I really liked it. I thought it was really cool. There's a lot of really interesting themes, and it's a sci-fi alien sort of environment that, nonetheless, like the way that Michelinie writes it, there's a lot of like human emotion that you can connect with. So it doesn't feel so foreign to you. And Rai, he's still trying to be a part of his child's life, even though he's not even technically supposed to spend time with the child. He's not supposed to have access to the child. He fights his, he pushes his way past the guard just so that he can spend some time with his infant son, and gets in a fight with his wife, his estranged wife. So. Yeah, it was really cool. It's really promising. And I think it's really cool that, that a company has the rights to these books, that are like willing to put the effort to put them out in a nice format.
Yeah, I love the Masters. Plus, I love the paper.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really nice book. There's like a bunch of extras in the back, and because there's a point, I haven't gotten to it yet, but there's a point at which you kind of need to know what happened in Unity to follow the story. They have like a 2-page timeline summary that you can read through that some to get an idea of what happened in the U Unity saga before you read number 8.
Cool.
So,
Does that have Rise Zero? Because that's a key book.
nope, it's just 1 through 8.
That was at one time free on Comixology. I don't know if it still is.
Zero.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the digital connection.
Yeah. But yeah, I would recommend it, at least based on the first issue, but just as far as the quality of the hardback and the it's a nice size and everything like that, and it's a good buy with the price that you can get it for online. So that is
So,
Rye number one.
Daryl, do you want me to go or do you want to go next?
It's up to you. You can go.
All right, I'll do this one real quick. It's Rima the Jungle Girl number one. This was I thought it was going to be a Joe Kubert issue, but he just did the cover. I think this is when he was having his students draw stuff. At least it's a guess. I don't know if this is fact. But he tended to do that with his school, as if he'd have backstories like the last 8 pages of story done by the Kubert School writers. But this is This is written by, the first issue is by Jack Olek, who I'm not familiar with, and Robert Carringer, who did a lot of war books, actually finished the title. The artist is Nestor Rodaldo with Alex Nino, and the cover is done by Joe Kubert. And the scene opens up in South America, where this guy's running in a Venezuelan jungle, and he's kind of delirious, like he's been poisoned, and he runs into some sexy lady, Rima, the jungle girl. And in this issue, the key character, Rima, isn't really in the issue. She's just in, like, scenes of his delusion. And he's basically saved by this guy, and he's nurturing him back to health, and he tells his backstory that there's a revolution going on, and he was fighting with the rebels, and they killed all his friends, and he was going through a village, and he met up with a local tribe, and they took care of him, and they started teaching him stuff, but they told him to stay away from this particular part in the Venezuelan jungle, but he was drawn into it, and he went into that piece of the jungle, and that's where he met Rima, and he actually tried to save Rima from a snake, and he was bitten, and that's how he got poisoned. And that's your loop back to the character. And the guy who saved him was actually like Rima's mentor. So the art is it looks very like Cooper, like almost like you wouldn't be surprised if Cooper didn't draw this, but it was a very interesting book, and I look forward to finishing the series. There's only 7 issues in this title. And then there's a backstory by Jack Olek, and art by, I can't even read the art, who the artist is, but it's called Space Voyagers, 4 Tombs, like science fiction. And it's about these 4 pilots in the spaceship that go visit this like native land. And they rescue a native from this like mosquito looking parasite that's trying to kill this person, and they kind of save him, and they kill the beast, and they end up following the alien to this mausoleum. And when they walk into the mausoleum, they see themselves in their own crypts, like they're dead. And like holy shit, we're dead. They're us. And that's how it ends. Cliffhanger to be continued next issue.
Nice. I had to say, so I snuck out for a minute because I had to pee really, really bad. And I couldn't hold it anymore. And so our house, right, it's like you get to the top of the stairs and the bathroom's right there. And then there's just like 2 rooms to either side of you. A small little landing. So I just ran out there. I didn't close the door.
Oh, there's Keith.
Uh-oh.
It's a Keith connection.
The door?
He does not close the door. He goes poops and leaves the door open.
I don't. Well, I close the door for that. But I have a habit of not closing the door when I pee.
Ah.
Oh, no.
And so Kara's downstairs, and I hear her walking up. So you can kind of like look up the staircase and almost look into the bathroom.
Yeah, and you're there pissing.
Oops. So I'm walking up, and she walked up and she looked and she started laughing. She said, "Oh, I thought you were taking a shower," because it was quite a deposit that I had to make.
Quite a show.
Quite a show. So that was kind of funny.
I always close the door. But I didn't close it shut one time, like completely shut. And I was getting ready to wipe my ass, and Harley came in.
Oh!
She pushed the door open. So, yeah, it's times like that.
Yeah, if you don't close the door all the way, though, Luna does the same thing because she hates closed doors. She'll push her nose in. And the toilet's right next to the door, so she's looking right at you when she opens up the door. She'll just open it enough to see. What's going on? I'm like, what's up, Luna?
Yeah, sitting there wiping my ass, laughing my ass off, because she's looking at me like, what the fuck are you doing?
Hey, can't you just lick it like I do?
I felt so shamed.
Damn. Well, I guess they say you if somebody has to always watch them when they go to the bathroom. Like, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
It's just like, what do you? It's like, why you think I'm? Why you think what you're doing is weird? It's like you stand there with the bag and then pick it up and take it with you when I go to the bathroom.
Like, I'm trying to get rid of poop and you want to take it home with it.
You want to save it for some reason.
You pack it up. I don't understand.
Weirdo. Just really thinking weirdo.
All right, Daryl, what do you got for us?
I read, like, last week, I read Batman 465. This is volume one. This came out in 1991 in July, in the summertime. It's written by Alan Grant, and its penciler is Norm Brayfogel, and inks by Steve Mitchell. And the editor was Dennis O'Neill at the time. And it was actually Tim's first debut as Robin, his first night out as on patrol with Batman. And there were some major things that had happened. Like, Jim Gordon earlier had a heart attack from smoking. So he had just came back to the force in this issue. Also, you had Sarah, who he had kind of cheated on his wife with and then broke up with in year one. She came back. He had already broke up with his wife and they divorced and all that. And she moved away. But Sarah came back and he asked her to marry him in this issue. And this is when Batman was a little less angry, because you had he got Tim back. Tim kind of pushed his way in. He's kind of helping him to get over the loss of Jason Todd. You even have in the beginning of the patrol, like he's gone down a list of there's things that you have to do. And part of the list, he's like, and if you don't do it, and then Tim says, what, I'll get killed, you know, and he said it nonchalantly, like he didn't realize, you know, how much what he would think about when he said it. And then he saw Batman's face. He kind of had that, you know, that emotional moment. And Brayfogel just had a way of doing those white eyes in Batman's mask, but it can portray emotion, like a smile, surprise, fear, anger, like sadness. He does it all in that cowl, even though it had no eyes. It was just a white, just this all white in the eyes. So you had Alfred and Harold. Harold was the kind of the guy that maintained the tech. Like, he was somebody born malformed, and he was treated like an outcast because of it. So he lived under there.
He looks a lot like the Hunchback from Notre Dame.
A lot like it. And Batman had kind of adopted him. He's really smart and he's a genius when it comes to tech. So he kind of said, you know, you can come and stay in the Batcave with me and be part of my family. Ace the dog had joined the team. He was part of the group, and Batman's petting the dog. He loves the dog. He was not mad at the dog. And Ace would run around every time the Batmobile would come back. Ace would run to the car and greet him. Like, that was a little cool thing that they had. I mean, and these are little things that gave Batman more of a personality. He wasn't just the lone knight that by this drunk guy, so he jumps down and defends her, but it's just something's not right with her, and he tells her to go home, and she says, you don't tell me what to do. And then she's yelling that all men are alike, and she walks away. And then Batman has a date with Vicki Vale, because Vicki Vale was still in the book at this time. And so they're on that date, going to this premiere or something with these actors, and it's a benefit type of thing. And then the lady, it kind of connects, because the lady that was upset and yelling about her boyfriend who treats her bad, who kind of mistreated her and is marrying someone else, you find out later that she's actually a stalker who was in love with the actor from a cat. He was just a character from a soap opera, which happened to be a soap opera that Alfred and Harold was watching in the Batcave. That was at the same benefit, and she.
What a coincidence!
What a coincidence! That's comic book coincidence right there. So she goes there with a gun. Like, they find out that they do a little background check on her, and they find out that she is delusional. She has problems with discerning, TV from reality. So she goes there to shoot the woman that she thinks is taking her man from her. So Bruce Wayne is stuck in as Bruce Wayne, so he doesn't have his gadgets to kind of throw and stuff. And Tim follows her to the spot, but he's trying to figure out what to do without, alerting her and her just start shooting people. So Batman pretends to be in love with her. He yells that I love her, and then he gets into a fake fight and knocks the actor out, and he kind of guess that by him hurting the actor, it would snap in her head and she would run to help him, thinking that it was the actor that she loves, and that's what she did. And then they were able to take the gun from her, and then him and Robin are like later they're perched at this high roof or whatever, and they're just talking like that. Something is just a throwaway panel of just them eating. They're eating food, eating sandwiches on top of a roof. And just the ease that he had with Tim, being around Tim. Tim was like...
They felt good because they weren't eating grass.
They weren't eating grass. They were eating sandwiches, and they're just hanging out. And he's kind of talking to him about, like, how did your first day of patrol go? First night on patrol go. And they're talking about it. And he goes to visit his father, who's in a coma, because earlier... his mother and father went on a safari, and the natives in that area were trying to kill them and poison them. And the poison, Batman fought his way through, but she couldn't get to the mother in time, so the poison killed her and paralyzed the father. And he's in a coma now. And he watches him, and then he stands over him, and he watches him, and he leaves. And then the father comes out of the coma, and then... at the last part, you see the signal come, and then Batman runs to the roof thinking something bad happened. And then he goes, no, nothing bad happened this time. He says that I asked Sarah to marry me, and for some reason, you were the first person I just had to tell. So that was just a happy moment. That does not sound like Batman, does it?
No.
Not at all. I mean,
he has occasional happy moments, but they're just like usually one panel.
And Alan Grant is a guy who, he's a writer who brought in the less cartoony characters. Like, he didn't use the Penguin or the Joker, or, he brought in Zazz and Anarchy and serial killers and criminals. Like, that was his thing. Like, he, mm-hmm. when he came into the book, he didn't have any desire to do the Adam West type of characters, the really colorful stuff.
How things turn around, because Penguin is his own serial killer nowadays.
Yeah, now what they wind up doing is not only using them, but making them a very more darker versions of what they were when they started. But that's reading that, it just reminds me of that was my Alan Grant was my Batman, like, and Brayfogle was my versions that I knew, even with Neil Adams with Brave and the Bold. That was the other stories that I read of Batman, which had other characters and involved in it, like Oliver Queen and stuff like that. So it's just good stuff.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite Batman.
Oh yeah.
It's interesting too that you say that, and you talk about how it was a lighter Batman and he wasn't as angry. Cause I was just thinking the other day, like, I mean, I'm enjoying Batman Eternal so far. And, I want to see this play out and everything like that, but it would be interesting if after that's all concluded in next year and stuff, it would be to almost see if DC would do an approach like Marvel has done with Daredevil, mm-hmm. I think
not necessarily artistically, but just in the way, in the tone that Wade has struck with Daredevil, where it's not silly, it's not a comedy book or anything like that, but there's a lightness to the Daredevil character. Because I mean, Batman has that swashbuckling aspect to him as well at times. So it would be interesting if they lightened up him as a character somewhat. And I think it'll happen at some point just because of the way that things cycle around, you know. But
All right. Well, with Cassie being like, now you have not Cassie, Stephanie Brown is going to be in the book, and you're going to have a little bit more with Robin, because you know, like the Batman family are going to get more time. So I guess he would, you know, you get more time with him, and you Tim hopefully will get more development, because I think that he's been the one that has the least amount of time with Batman out of the Batman family so far. So you'd have that. You'd have maybe Damian is coming back, because we have that coming up with the Robin thing. Grayson will be off the table for a little bit. Like, he won't be available to be in a Batman book to work with him, but he'll be alive and working on a mission, so he'll still be alive, and he knows. So we'll have that. We'll have Batwing will be working closer with Batman. Like, Batwing is that character is another character who is kind of like Dick Grayson in terms of being skilled, and like he connects with Batman on a scientific level, because he has a thing for science too, which used to be what Tim had. Tim was very good with electronics and things like that, and he's very good with tech. And him and Batman, like in his issues with Batwing, he's actually had discussions with them working on the suit. So you have that connection. Like, it's different characters have different connections to Batman, and that writers were good at utilizing what connected him with these particular characters. And it wasn't always just that their parents were killed. It was other things too that connected
Yeah,
them.
it's like Batman has so many facets, and the different supporting characters bring out those different facets. So nice. Cool. Well, I did a little back issue, old issue shopping yesterday. There's like a, they call it an antique mall, about like 20 minutes from here. I'd never been there before, but what it turned out to be was how they have it set up is they have all these display cases, like almost like somebody that's wants to display their like action figures or something like that might buy.
And they rent the space, right?
I never been to one like that, but they rent the cases, and they're not even there themselves. They're there was there's people that work there and walk around and open up the cases for you. So I had known that there was this guy there that had a couple cases that sold comics, and but I never made it down there to look at what he had. And but I saw that the antique mall is moving, so they're a lot of the people that own cases are doing sales, because they're either not moving to the new location, or they're trying to reduce their inventory that they need to move. And he was doing 50% off of everything. So I went down there and I took a look, and I ended up just getting stuff from his the one case that has that everything's a dollar, and so with the 50% off it was 50 cents. But I ended up getting like 32 issues or something, and they're all Bronze Age DC stuff, which you normally I don't normally see a lot in dollar bins and stuff, but part of it I think was because they're like, I don't know, I mean most of them are probably very good. Some of them be like good, and maybe like one or two that I grabbed would be might be bordering on poor, but they're so they're a little beat up, but they're most of them are in like pretty good condition, and like still a really good buy, I think, at 50 cents for the era, like mid 70s
DC stuff. So, you know, I mean, I won't like mention all the stuff I got, but there's some like good stuff in there. I got a couple issues of first issue special, one with the Green Team and another with Metamorpho. I got a few issues of Volume 1 Flash, some Freedom Fighters, some Justice League of America ones. Like, so the one that was probably the most beat up was issue 101 of Justice League of America, 20-cent issue. This one's probably like on the poor level, but it's like a reader copy kind of. But yeah, so like a handful of Justice League issues, and a few like Volume 1 Wonder Woman's in the 200s. But what I read from these yesterday when I got home was two out of the four issues of Metal Men that I got. 45 and 46 is what I read, and I also got 47 and 48. And these jumped out at me because of their recent appearance in the New 52 and Justice League 28 and 29. I had just read those, and I really liked Jeff Johns's update on them, which is not like a far cry from their original, it turns out. But and it's just like some serendipitous issue, because then I got, or this week, because I got my DCBS order, and it had an issue of Back Issue Magazine in it, and the Metal Men are on the cover of it. It's like a robot issue, so.
Yeah, I got that too. It's pretty
cool.
Yeah,
so the Metal Men are invading my my universe in, at this moment. But what was kind of interesting, what turned out, is that this issue 45 turned out to be the return of the series. They had been running for a while up to like 40 something, and then had reprinted some of their earlier appearances for a couple issues. And then when they decided to bring the series back, because it was the 70s, they continued the original numbering. So 45, this is actually the first like kind of a return. This would be like today would be a new number one. And I was surprised to open up the open up 45 and find out that these issues are penciled by Walt Simonson.
You know, it'd be interesting is if they had relaunched it as a number one to see if sales like went up. Because mm-hmm. I don't think back in the day people gave a shit. Mm-hmm. I really don't.
No.
I think they just jumped in whenever they felt like. Yeah, they bought comics.
Well, back in the day, they would even reuse stuff that they'd already published. They would just reuse it.
Yeah, but a lot
of cover on it.
That is true. But a lot of it was in the giant size and stuff, like reprint. Like you get the original content and then three stories from the Golden Age or something like that.
Mm-hmm. It was disposable back then.
Yeah, like it wasn't just like it would be a big deal when a movie would be aired on television for the first time, because you didn't have access to things, you know? It's like people would actually get excited for reprints and stuff because they couldn't just go on the internet and, you know, download a copy of it, or you know, they would re-release movies in theaters a lot more often because people didn't have a way of seeing them, you know.
Yeah, there was no trades.
If we went back in time, Daryl would hate it. Like he'd be like, "Why the fuck I have this paper again?"
I dealt with it, but I had no other context of how to deal with it. I mean,
no, but you've been spoiled, my friend.
I have been totally spoiled.
Yeah, you get. I think if they like transport our society to the past, you'd have like a whole. You'd have to corner like a whole bunch of people while they go through their detox from their technology.
Oh man, that would be horrible.
My iPhone ran out of battery, and I had forgotten my charger the other day, and I got home and I plugged it into the charger, and it was like taking a hit. But Metal Man, this 45 was written by Steve Gerber, and then apparently the who's to be the regular writer, Jerry Conway, writes 46. This only ran a little while. I think in issue 50 something it got canceled with the DC implosion. But But you got the Metal Men, and they continue the continuity of the last time a new issue had been a new story had been published. This is called "Evil Is in the Eye of the Beholder," and it starts off with the Metal Men. They're actually they are without Dr. Magnus. They are kind of doing a vaudeville act. They're touring the country and just performing for people. Because and actually, like, they take questions from the audience, and somebody asks, whatever happened to that Doc Magnus guy anyway? And they all just get sad and look to the floor, and finally, Tin just asks them to go to the next question. We'd rather not talk about him. So we get actually some backstory. Then we see that, we find out that Doc Magnus had been brainwashed by a dictator of a company named Carnia, and he'd been twisted so that his mind was broken, and that he hated all of his former friends, and he's going through some treatment in this psychiatric facility called Shady Oaks, and the psychiatrist shows him different pictures, and she shows him a picture of a flower, and he says, "Trample." And she shows him a picture of a city, and he says, "Raise." And he shows him a picture of a happy family. He says, "Annihilate."
It sounds like Daryl.
That's right.
So finally, he shows him a picture of the Metal Men themselves, and there's just this empty word balloon. And he flips to the next page, and his eyes get big and red, and he starts shaking and sweating, and he screams, "Shred!" And he grabs the piss paper out of her hands and just tears it to bits while he's screaming. So there's some guys watching this on the monitor, some military people, and a man from the accounting department, the accounting office, named Whittier. And they're like, "Look, he's obviously not ready to be released to society. He's still crazy." But the guy Whittier says, "Well, according to the accounting office and our budgets, he's cured. We need him to repeat his experiment with the Metal Men. We need to him to repeat his successes. So you're gonna at least release him into our custody so that we can get him using his scientific mind for our benefits." So meanwhile, cut back to the Metal Men. They're trying to check into a hotel, and you're like, "You guys, you're not even living beings. You can't check into a hotel. You don't have last names. You don't have any luggage." And like, "We don't, golds. We don't need sand. We don't need luggage. We don't wear clothes." And Tin says, "Shh, you make us sound like nudists." So this guy comes in, tries to stick up the hotel lobby. He's wearing a mask and he's got a gun. And so the Metal Men spring into action and protect people, as they're programmed to do. And they unmask the guy that tries to shoot up the place. Turns out to be a former employee that got let go because of cutbacks, and he's just trying to get money to feed his family and stuff. Cut back to Dr. Magnus, and he has created the Plutonium Man, the deadliest made out of the deadliest metal known. A thousandth of a gram is lethal, and it's if that's the case, then it's pretty lethal, because he's like, I don't know, like a couple, like 100 feet tall or something like that.
I'm into first appearances. That is the first appearance of that character.
Is it? Cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
Collector's
So.
item.
Nice. For 50 cent. So they try to, so within like minutes, they lose control of the Plutonium Man. He yells, "Caged, must break out, must be free,"
To
and
be
starts
food.
rampaging on his way out of there. And it turns out that the Whittier, the guy that's from the accounting department, he's actually a spy for the nation of Carnia, the nation whose dictator brainwashed and destroyed Dr. Magnus's mind. So this was a part of the whole thing, and kind of like when Magnus created the Metamon, his psyche, his when he programmed Plutonium Man, his thought patterns transferred into the Plutonium Man. So Plutonium Man is making his way through Washington, and it says he's it shows him trampling and razing and annihilating, just as Dr. Magnus wanted to do in his psych test. And just like Dr. Magnus, he has a hatred for the metal men. So when they happen upon each other on the streets, he immediately attacks them, and he's got, you know, it's all radioactive and stuff, so human beings can't get next to him, and it's a perfect job for them. And Led's using his powers to shield the nuclear, well, using his body to sh his lead body to shed to protect people of the plutonium rays. But even he is susceptible once it gets to a certain temperature and starts melting. And you know, each of the metal men, they make attempts when ultimately Platinum takes him down by fusing herself with Plutonium Man and entrapping the heat of the robot inside of hers. And Dr. Magnus by this point is nearby, and she says, you know, is she yells out that she still loves Dr. Magnus, and it starts to kind of break through the mental status that he's been in. Starts to crack a little bit and starts to get back some of his own personality. And but having contained Plutonium Man, when he goes Nova, he melts through the bedrock below. And Tina, as they call Platinum a lot in this issue, Tina explodes as he does so. And it's actually a panel, like three panels in a row, where Platinum's head bounces through the panels and then lands at Dr. Magnus's feet, and her head's lying there, but it's too hot to touch. He just says goodbye and I'm so sorry. And there's an aftermath where they tell you that there's been a bunch of decontamination procedures and whatnot to clean up the city. And Dr. Magnus at this point has apparently been able to pick up Platinum's head, so he's walking through a cemetery, holding Platinum's head in his hand, and we see that he's starting to get better and back to his sanity because of the metal men. And we see that at the end, the story's been dedicated to Robert Kanigher, Ross Andrew, and Mike Esposito, who were the initial creators of the Metal Men. So it's de dedicated to them. So, and I'll just cover 45 because that was a pretty big recap of that one. But yeah, it was cool. I liked it. I really don't have any history with the Metal Men, and it's kind of fun how they each have their own personalities, and I like the update of them. Stays pretty close. And Geoff Johns stays pretty close to their initial appearances. They just made a few changes to, like, the appearance of Gold, and but they're pretty. If you like them in their appearance recently, you probably would like going back and checking out their older appearances, it seems like.
Yeah, I love the Metal Men. I have almost a full run of that.
Nice.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, they're cool. They're pretty new to me, but yeah, they're cool. I like them. And it seems like, look, I was looking at their history a little bit. It seems like they were kind of created at a last minute kind of thing. Like they needed to fill some space, so they came up with the idea real quick and it caught on.
Yeah, that back issue looks like it's gonna be a damn good read, because it's like all focused on robots like Jocasta and Metal Men and Red Tornado and the Vision. I mean, it's just got some really damn good articles in there.
Yeah, it's a
It
cool
should be a
theme.
lot of fun. My next one is Captain America 357 from, it's the first issue in the Bloodstone Hunt. and it's written by Mark Grenwald with art by Al Milgram. And it's a two-issue, it has two stories in this. The first story is wrapping up another story. Mark Grenwald was a master of this. He just had so many threads going on in his book that he could, it was almost like three threads in every story. But the first story is continued from the previous one, which I don't remember reading, but they do a real good recap. This is where Cap had fellow Avenger Cersei turn him into a kid so he could go undercover to take out the sister, whatever that nun look is. Mother Knight is her name, and her brother Scarbo, and the Sisters of Sin. And she was like a creepy-looking, nun-looking character that had psychological abilities to have people follow her. And she was doing that with a bunch of teenagers, and Cap had to go undercover. But and they didn't even know it was Cap. They were going to beat the shit out of him because they caught him doing stuff. And the Sisters of Mercy were going to kill him until they got a fight over who was going to kill him first. And that gave him a second to get away. But he was going to die anyway because he's this 17-year-old kid. And he doesn't have his powers because Cersei put that spell on him so he could go undercover. And it was supposed to only wear out within the next, I don't know, day or so. And he didn't think, he thought he was going to die. They were going to pummel him to death. But he actually defeated the Sisters of Mercy because Cersei put a thing in her spell and didn't tell him that if he was in danger, he would revert back to Captain America. So luckily Cap's still alive because Cersei put the extra spell in there and didn't tell him about it.
Yeah, but she knew.
She knew, and it's because she wants to have sex with the man.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that later. But he ends up fighting the brother of Mother Knight, Scarbo, and it's a pretty good fight scene. Scarbo kind of holds his own until he hogties him, and then he rescues one of the other teenage girls, and then he goes after Mother Knight, and she sends all the teenagers after him, and he's like, how could I fight, you know, these innocent teenagers? They're being brainwashed. But luckily, he uses his Cap mental abilities and gets to Mother Knight's throat. When he knocks her out, all the kids are free of her influence. And he does his Cap speech, and all the kids go off. And then he reveals to the girl, the one girl that he was kind of like liking in this camp, another teenage girl, he reveals that he was really Captain America and takes off his mask. And she says, you mean like Tom Hanks in the movie Big? But in reverse. That was kind of an interesting thing. And then he has a short conversation with Bernie, who was kind of like his love of that time. And she throws out, she just got back from he was going to rescue Bernie's sister because she was missing. But it turns out his sister wasn't missing because she was at a Grateful Dead concert. So... and he says, considering all the alternatives, this country could use a lot more deadheads. That's what Cap says. But then he has a date with Cersei because she basically takes off her shoe and puts it in his crotch underneath the table.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, she's got that foot there. And he says, I think this is the start of a beautiful friendship. You know, Cersei says that, and Cap is like, oh, if I ever get out of this with my dignity intact, I'll never ask her to do me a favor again. Cersei's pretty damn sexy. I don't know.
Damn right she is.
And her foot is in his crotch. And,
I don't mind.
Daryl would have been in paradise.
Like, I'd have been like, I do owe you, don't I? Cersei went through the whole thing. Like, she loved virtuous characters. Like, she went when Dan was suffering for his love for Crystal, who was married to Quicksilver. She went and she wanted to be with him too. like she moved away from Cap and she wanted to be with Dan for a while. So it's her thing, man. She loves it.
Yeah, it made me want to read her first appearance, which I just coincidentally bought recently by accident.
Oh, I remember that when they asked her to join and she was just hanging out. I remember when they first asked her to join the Avengers when the team was kind of scattered.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just hanging out and stuff. Like, she was a socialite, pretty much. She liked to party.
I can't believe Cap is so upset. I mean, it's awkward and he's got a girlfriend. But
that was Cap, man.
He's like repulsed by that foot in his crotch.
He didn't like that. That was Cap.
And it's funny because they're out and about at a restaurant, you know, in a candlelight dinner, mm-hmm. with a band playing in the background. Oh. And Cersei's just wearing like a night dress. And he's in public and he's in his Cap outfit.
Grunwald never really gave him a persona. He just hung out as Cap. He was just Cap all the time. He was never really,
yep.
never really had a life.
And that, the reason I'm reading this Bloodstone is because it leads us to the first appearance of Crossbones, but I'm not there yet.
Okay.
But the prologue then leads us into the second part of the series. And interesting enough, it has a Batroc. Is that
Batroc, I think.
Batroc, Machete, and Zauron.
Mm-hmm.
And Zauron and Machete were kind of like minor characters that worked with Batroc. And so Machete, he's got like a bunch of machetes, and he's kind of like an armed guy. Zauron first appeared in a Master of Kung Fu, and he's kind of like a badass fighter. And I think he's got a little bit of superpowers, and then we know about Batroc, the kicker, the leaper. And they're out there to steal a body for Baron Zemo, and the body is the skeleton of Ulysses Bloodstone. And if you know, the Monster Hunter from Marvel Comics is named Bloodstone, and now his ancestor's a female, and she's Bloodstone. But they're looking at his body, and they have this weird guy, Tripsman Microburr, a psychic detective there to tell him the history of Bloodstone and hopefully get the Bloodstone power. And Diamondback is there, and she's watching all of this, and she's spying on this group, and they catch her, and they actually take her out. And I think Machete is the one that's disappointed because he wants to. It looks like he wants to have sex with her, but the other want to kill her. So they actually get this bone, collarbone or something out of the casket. And they would supposedly have the Bloodstone power, and they throw Diamondback in the container that had the body, and they kind of like threw her into a dark pit to die, and that's how the issue ended. But a lot of villains, like four major Cap villains, and some like guy that looks like the Fantasy Island, the plane guy. Who's able to read bones.
Nice.
The psychic detective.
Yeah, I started buying issues of Cap in that era, like the late 300s, because the few issues that I did have when I was a kid were like late 300s, like after the Bloodstone. I have like half of the Bloodstone crossover, and then I have like a bunch of... I have a pretty close to a full run like later on in the 300s, but that was because I like that era with Diamondback, and later on you have like the Streets of Poison storyline. It was good stuff.
Yeah.
And then the other like coincidence was the Captain America Epic Collection. I've been reading that the last couple weeks, and that actually has so I just read it starts off right at like where he's just moving into the apartment in Brooklyn Heights, and so I just read a week or two ago Bernie Rosenthal's first appearance. I assume it is. It's Captain America 248, and he gets home and is invited to dinner by some of his neighbors, and he's introduced to her.
I like her.
And he's like, whoa. You can see in his face, like, because he's introduced to Bernie, he's like, oh, it's. He's not expecting a girl. She tells him it's short for Bernadette, and so they're just like, it's like that moment where like the other people in the room all of a sudden like don't matter, and they're just looking at each other like, we got a future together. But
Daryl, you got another one?
just I've only read one issue so far of it, but I bought some of the Justice League Europe and International. Because they were having a little sale on that too. And that's with
Nice.
Giffen and DeMatteis and art by Bart Sears and Marcos. And it was just fun to read this, especially after how they've been writing Justice League United recently, with that issue. I think it's really made me think of these stories of setting up. And this is when Captain Atom was just a mess. Like he never got himself together. Like he wanted to be a serious, he wanted to be like Captain America. He wanted to be a serious military dude. He was, you know, he wanted to do the right thing, but trying to get these misfits together, and that those misfits were Animal Man, The Flash, which was Wally West, Metamorpho, Power Girl, big boobies, the red, what was it? The red, the armored one. The armored one, he was in
Rocket
the
Red.
Rocket Red. Wonder Woman was in it for a second. Because a lot of the thing with these series is you buy it and you read it, and Wonder Woman, you'd see that these characters are going to be in there. And if you're a Wonder Woman fan, she's in it like two issues and then she's gone. Like she would get a call and then I gotta go. And then she'd be gone. The same thing with the Justice League
She
one.
probably said, I can't deal with this nonsense.
Yeah, I can't be here with this. The same thing with Justice League. Like it started out with them, with Guy Gardner being a jerk, sitting there, with nobody declaring that he was going to be the leader of the Justice League, and then you got Black Canary coming in, and every time someone came in, they were like, "No, you're not. You're not the leader." And Batman, and you think you're going to have Batman and them on the team, and you had Shazam, but he didn't have the mature personality. He was more like Billy, the way it was written. And you had Martian Manhunter, which was serious. He didn't want to be leader, but out of the whole group, he was the best one to be the leader, kind of because he didn't want to, but he knew how to lead a team. And of course, you had Dr. Fate. You had Dr. Light, the second Dr. Light, not the first one, not the evil criminal Dr. Light, but the new woman who was like a scientist who was given the powers by accident. And she had a daughter. That was her story. And it had Mr. Miracle and Oberon, and it was just fun to see them. Like basically they're just moving in. The first issue is nothing. They're just moving in and arguing about who's going to be the leader and all that kind of stuff. And it's just like a day in the life, like they're just starting a job for the first time, and all of them are just misfits. And even when they're trying to be serious, like even Batman trying to be serious and stuff, like Aquaman was with the Detroit team, nobody's really listening. Like they just can't get it together. So it's just fun. I'm going to go back and try to read all of it if I can catch up on it eventually. But I get ADD too, and I start moving into something else. I don't. I read like five or six issues, just like I did with. I started reading Ed Brubaker's first Captain America run, I'm like 12, 13 issues in, and then I got ADD, and then I'm moving to something else. I started getting back into DC. Like I'll go to Marvel something, and I go to DC, and then
I think
I'll
that's
jump
why we
around.
love comics so much, 'cause we can't we if we feel like something different, we move on. Do you know
We
what I
sure
mean?
do. We
I
sure
mean, and then
do.
we go back to it when we were in the mood for it.
That's what
Because
happens.
comics are about mood.
It is. It is. I never stick to the same thing. Like I will jump from. I feel like reading a police procedural kind of book, and I'll jump to the Fuse. You know, Image has something called the Fuse, and I jump to that, which is sci-fi and that. And it just doesn't. It doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like it. I want to read Invincible for a change. You know, then I want to read Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Or Action Lab is having something. I want to read something with that, with zombies or something. It's just that's the fun of being able to I think it's the fun of not saying to yourself, I'm only a DC fan, or I'm only a Marvel fan, or I'm only an indie, or I'm only a mainstream comic fan.
We're comics fans.
Right. We're just comic fans, so it doesn't matter. I'm going to check it out. I mean, if it has anything in it that I'm interested in, it's going to get me to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that's something when you're a big comic fan that you understand too. Like, from the outside, it looks like it's all superheroes, but really, just like someone says they're into movies, that doesn't really tell you much, because there's so many different kinds of movies, you know?
Exactly.
And we understand that, like, comics, that's just that's a format. We enjoy the format, you know, and it's a way of delivering stories. And I mean, you can be into all kinds of different genres and still get all of that in the comic book format, you know.
That's true. Hellboy, I went through a tear 2 weeks ago, and in 1 week I read I think 20 issues of Hellboy in a week. Just because I just got on it, I just got a twitch of I want to read Hellboy. Like, I saw the art, like somebody had art up of Hellboy, and it just, whatever happened, the switch went off, and I was like, I want to read Hellboy, and I just started reading it, and just got so into that universe all over again, because it's been so long since I've read the Hellboy stuff, and it's just crazy. I love it, though. That's the great thing about comics. I think that's why I will never say I'm tired of comics. There's never been a time where I've declared I'm tired of comics and I'm not going to read anymore.
Yeah, I try to avoid saying stuff like that too, because I mean, I stopped reading new DC comics for like a whole year, and then
now you're getting sucked back.
Whatever happened, now it's like, and I don't. So it's like I don't even, and I don't. You know, it's like I'm cool with it. You know, just like, and it's not just DC. I mean, it's like new stuff in general. Like, yeah. I was keeping up on a weekly basis with whatever new issues they would add to the Marvel Unlimited. So that's basically new Marvel just like 6 months ago. So like each week it would just be like the next week in comics, but just 6 months ago. So I was doing that for a while, and then I stopped following along with that. But then like I picked up where I left off, and like over the last few weeks, like I've been just plowing through tons and tons of Marvel stuff from what would be like last fall, you know, and I'm just now getting into the Infinity crossover and stuff like that. But it's almost like at this point I just like I don't resist it that much. I try to finish things off, but I don't put too much pressure on myself to do so, because, you know, I'll find out how into it I am. Maybe I'll just read a couple issues and I'll go back to what I was reading before that, or maybe I'll get really sucked in and I'll be reading that same type of stuff for a couple weeks or whatever, you know. Just it always just remains to be seen.
We all have the ADD.
But
do you got any more books, Chris?
No, that probably kind of wraps up to me. I was going to say, in relation to that same point, though, just when I saw that question that William asked you about Doctor Strange and Defenders, like I was glad he was asking you, because it made me think of like the number of things that I've started out talking about. Like, you know, I think I covered like 2/3 of Camelot 3000, and then
yeah.
Never talked about that again. And then like I've talked about like 3 issues of the Millennium crossover,
and haven't been, gone like, back to it yet.
Episodes. It's sometimes I finish things off in between, and then by the time we record another episode, I've forgotten about it. But other times, I just like leave off and kind of forget about it. You know.
Yeah, I think it's good to move on if you're not feeling it at the time, because then you come back to it and you're back into it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's the ED. Yeah, it's the bug. Exactly. I got one more book. Amazing Spider-Man 110. The first appearance of the Gibbon. And, man, Pete is whiny in this issue. Like, I heard somebody say, "Man, I'm gonna miss Spectacular Spider-Man, or not Superior Spider-Man, because Pete is gonna get whiny on us again." But this is like ultimate whiny. This is by Stan Lee and John Romita. So it is, what year is this? 1972, and he had just saved Flash Thompson's life with the help of Doctor Strange, only to find out that he thinks that his woman is gonna go with Flash Thompson, which is Gwen. So Gwen's still alive at this time, and he's very frustrated. Frustrated to the point where he's like smashing shit on a roof because he's just like, "Oh man, I have no money. My aunt is sick. Everything's going to hell. My girlfriend's leaving me." He even take and then he says, "Well, at least I can make some money selling the pictures of Doctor Strange." And then he's got that camera belt at this time, and the camera
Oh,
belt didn't fucking work. It didn't snap any pictures, and he's
it
like,
never works.
"Oh shit! Not only is my day going to hell, but I didn't get any pictures to make any money." And he throws the camera, and he's like, "Oh shit! I saved money to buy that camera, and now I'm gonna break it." And he tries to web it to try to save his camera, and he misses it, probably because he's so frustrated. But someone catches it, and it turns out to be this guy who's like amazingly acrobatic, but he looks like he's a Neanderthal. Like, he just looks like his face didn't evolve, and he's like kind of like an ape. And but Spidey doesn't like point out anything to him. His name is Martin Blank, and he introduces himself and gives him his camera back. And Spidey goes on, like, he starts saying, "Well, you think you have a tough life, Spider-Man. My life is even worse. People treat me like an animal." And he's homeless, and he lives by him, in a homeless society, and people still give him shit. And then it gives his origin story, how nobody would hire him. Kids would make fun of him. When he got a job, he had to work at the circus, and he was even better than the acrobats at the circus, but they didn't want him to outshine the acrobats because he was so ugly. So they'd have him dress up in an ape costume, and then Gwen's there. This is an interesting thing that happens. Pete comes back. He's exhausted. He's been up for 4 straight days for whatever reason, and he's about to pass out. And Gwen is there, and she's like, "I'm so worried about you." And Aunt May was there, and I think Gwen like gives some shit to Aunt May, like, "You're too maternal, and you never give him a break," and all this shit. She makes Aunt May feel like shit that she leaves. I never thought Gwen was a bitch, but man, that was kind of mean. And then Flash shows up with Harry, and Pete passes out. He's just from sheer exhaustion and starts to go to sleep. And Flash is there with his come on lines trying to pick up on Gwen, but Gwen is like totally in love with Pete.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like totally in love, but he's just misunderstood. He always seems to wake up during the, like, he wakes up and sees Flash put a jacket on Gwen or something like that, but he doesn't wake up at the right time when she's telling Flash, "I love Pete more than anything," you know what I mean? And so he's only seeing the perspective of Flash taking his woman, and he goes into like nightmare phase, and then he calls Aunt May when he wakes up, and then she leaves him a note like for Peter, but he didn't know what that's about because maybe she's so upset that she's trying to leave Peter alone. And then the guy shows up that he met earlier, except in his ape costume, and he's like, "Hey, Spider-Man, I want to be your partner." And Spider-Man kind of laughs him off, and they get into like a brief fight, but Spider-Man takes off, and he's like, "I don't need a partner," and that kind of stuff. And he throws a fit, and there's somebody watching him, and he's like, "I could use this guy to defeat Spider-Man," and they don't show who that guy is, so he's gonna turn the Gibbon into a villain, even though the Gibbon has a good heart and wants to help. So that was Amazing Spider-Man number 110 from 1972.
Good stuff.
Nice.
Whiny Spider-Man.
Yeah. Any other books you guys want to plug, or do you want to call it a day?
I don't have anything else prepared. That was it.
Yeah, I think I'm good.
All right. Well, this has been Geek Brunch Retrocast number 32. You can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com. You can leave comments there. You can leave iTunes reviews on iTunes, unless they start to not have iTunes reviews anymore because of the iOS. I don't know.
Who knows?
The world is falling apart.
They're trying to destroy my world.
If Amazon buys Apple, I don't know. We'll see.
I'm just saying, if Amazon wants to buy the Retrocast, I'm willing to
hear their offer.
It'll be like an episode of Retrocast is for sale if you want to buy it. Me and Chris will not argue. We won't be Cat Grant and Clark turning down $13 million. We will just gladly say okay.
Look, I sound mad now, but if they cut me a check for the Taylor Network,
You can have Mike Christopoulos.com as soon as you take it.
I'll be wearing Amazon t-shirts. I'll be mentioning Amazon every 5 minutes with my Kindle.
You'll be with Gary Busey on the damn commercial.
Exactly. I'll be lying.
Get me the TV, Daryl Taylor.
I'll be like, let me get to my Kindle, even though it's really an iPad. Let me get to my Kindle. I am for sale.
It's just an iPad with like a...
Sell all your friends on the Taylor Network.
I'll be like, you are now part of Amazon. Put these t-shirts on.
I just sold Tom King. I sold everybody.
Your soul belongs to Amazon.
You have to call Juan Castro and say, sorry, I sold you.
I sold you. You work for Amazon, sir. I'm sorry. Listen, it's the way it has to be. I think when the checks come in, everybody will be like, okay.
Okay.
Won't be too much fighting.
That's right.
Yep.
Chris, you can reach it at MythMakingETC on the Twitters. I'm at Mike Myers Brunch, and Daryl is at The Voice 123. Chris has another podcasting on MythMakingETC that he covers like solo issues. And he also mentioned you could go find out about Star 80.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, www.criticalmassesmedia.com.
There you go.
But that's actually where MythMaking ETC is. MythMakingETC.com just redirects you to the podcast episodes on that site. But yeah, if you click on my name, I haven't written as many articles recently, but there's a backlog of like movie and music stuff when I was in that cycle. I was writing about that stuff.
There's the ADD.
Yeah.
That's true.
Seriously, I try to control it, but
it can't be controlled right now.
Sometimes you just have to hug your surfboard and ride the wave.
Yeah, that's right.
But
I think that's it. We got a really nice email. I don't think we mentioned it before. That said somebody was enjoying the hell out of the podcast.
He said he was loving the shit out of it.
The shit out of it, yeah.
I was glad to receive that because I was noticing that our podcast was missing its shit. So now I know where it went.
You gotta have your shit. You're doing a podcast.
Mystery solved.
Yeah, that's right. He asked us if we could cover awesome. Runaways because it fits the 10-year mark, the first arc, and I think we both read it already.
Yeah, I read it mostly as it was coming out because I thought that was a really good...
One of the best first issues ever, huh?
It was a good property, you know, in an age where it's hard to get new things to catch on, you know?
Yeah.
But they were pretty much all, like, new characters, and Brian K. Vaughan did a really good job of making them interesting and likable new characters that I got invested in. So I mean I never like I didn't read like some of the other later stuff that they did, but I read that whole stretch where it was mostly written by him and then Joss Whedon wrote some at the end. That was like volume one and two or something.
Yeah.
It was all really good.
I think it was in that tsunami wave that Marvel did. They
That's
launched a lot
right.
of new, like Human Torch and Namor and Runaways and a couple other stuff.
Yeah, then they all have like
Runaways is the only one that I remember being like really memorable. Like I remember what happened.
I think it was one of the only one that it might have been the only one that lasted. I remember they all had those like black covers
Yeah.
with like a single color image on it and stuff, but yeah, I think that was one of the only tsunami ones that really caught on.
Yeah.
Was the Sentry a part of that? The one, the boy with the sentinel?
Oh, right.
Or not, was it not called Sentry? Was it called
Yeah.
Sentinel?
Yeah, I think it was
Sent.
called Sentinel.
Yeah. That was either a part of it or it was around the same time.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was a good one too. I really liked that one. And
I know
he
it was
just recently
critical.
he recently played a part in Avengers Arena.
Yeah.
That was a good one. I
You're like,
liked
oh,
that. That was a
we got
good.
this character.
There's two good ones. I'm glad you mentioned that one. I mean that were memorable to me, and they were new properties. They were
Yeah.
new properties. Somebody dropped something.
Oh. I
My
kicked.
dick just hit the floor.
I took my pants off.
Was trying to make myself comfortable.
Didn't mean it happens to me every time. Can't help
I didn't know it'd make that much noise.
myself. I try to be quiet about it. Just something I have to deal with in my life.
On that note,
Yeah, we'll go with that story
we'll
because
go off with that note.
it's more interesting than the truth of me knocking my. My wireless mouth on the floor for the 250th time.
Oh,
Just drop my dick.
wow.
Yeah.
Right, well, we'll talk to you guys later. Thanks for being on, Daryl.
Touch it almost as much.
Always.
Especially when we were talking about all that retro porn, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go watch Star 80.
This is my
Been a
third,
while.
fourth mouse right now I'm
I
going
think I'm
to.
gonna title the episode "Star 80." I like that. If anybody,
You're gonna
retro.
have all those.
I wonder if there's anybody that'll get it, like because
Yeah, us old
me,
us old perverts.
immediately, like we watched that movie only for nudity, like.
You said Star 80, and I'm like, oh, that flashed right back to that. I saw it was boobies in it.
Those movies. I did the same thing.
That's all.
He made me laugh. I had when he mentioned that I had the same response. Your brothers, man.
That's the
Like, oh,
first
I
thing I
seen
thought
that.
of. It was dirty.
So dirty.
Was
All
dirty. That's the first thing I thought of.
right, well. I'll talk to you guys later. You guys have a good Sunday.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
From Kenner's Star Wars, the Empire Strikes Back Collection, Millennium Falcon that you put together, batteries not included.
Nice landing, Han Solo. Uh-oh, come on, Chewbacca, stormtroopers are coming.
Action figures each sold separately.
Got them on radar. I'll fire the laser cannon.
There's even a hidden storage hatch.
Ready for takeoff. Jump to light speed. We're gone. On to the Death Star.
Millennium Falcon from Kenner's Star Wars, the Empire Strikes Back Collection. Action figures each sold separately.